Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
We're going to just jump straight in. We're going to talk about kind of creativity and the art of transcreation. And I guess, Rick, the first question, just to kind of set a grounding for the people who don't know, briefly, what is transcreation? Why does it matter? And also, what makes it different from just translation?
Nothing too taxing then to start off.
Very simple.
Transcreation is language bewitched. It's the art of taking concepts and ideas rather than just words and making them work in whatever language, whatever culture, whatever time, whatever brand, anywhere, anyone.
Yeah. Okay. And are there any myths around kind of transcreation then that always come up that you kind of want to dispel now?
Too many to count.
That won't take all 15 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Myths to dispel. That it's just translation with a fancy name. That it's easy. That it's quick. It can be swift, but it's a time-honored process. You need to really kind of think about what it is you're trying to do with a language to make it come to life. No creative, anybody in this building, no creative that any agency had developed was done in a day. That might not necessarily be true, but you get my point. If you're going to do that in another language and another culture, you probably need to spend a bit more time, almost as much time as you spent generating that master creative to really make that sing in other languages.
Perfect. And then kind of this came from my research from you doing another interview, but there seems to be kind of three core pillars of transcreation. That's tone, idiom, and context. Can you expand on each of them and kind of why they matter and how they applied?
Yeah, tone is the voice I'm using now in how I approach and how I engage with people. So if you're a brand, you've got your own tone. You've probably worked hard to create it. You want to make sure that hits in the right way where you're going. The next thing that's going to plug into that is going to be idiom. There's so much idiom is used in, well, everyday speech, but certainly in every single piece of advertising. There's going to be idiomatic phrasing. There's going to be clever word plays and puns that are used. They don't work the same way in another language. So you've got to find a way to make them work. The answer to that is unlocking context, the final piece. So how is it used? Certain idiom in one country might feel like a 9 or a 10 on the kind of the sensitivity scale, but in another country it might be a 6. And one country might be quite bold in how they communicate. Let's pick on the Mediterranean, shall we? They're a bit more fiery. They're a bit more passionate. The stereotypes are true. So you've got to think about how you're going to tone that perhaps down if you're talking to Korea or if you're talking to Japan, for example.
So talking about that then, kind of why do brands need to kind of create great ads that kind of will resonate globally across those regions?
Well, because it goes beyond mere ROI, it's reach. You know, that brand that you've kind of created and you've engineered the nucleus of your proposition, you want that to be well received. You want that when that travels to not be laughed at. You want people to smile. You want people to look at it and go, you know what? That's good, that. I like it. I like the way it feels. It feels like something. It doesn't feel flat. In the 1980s, Coca-Cola had a campaign. I hope there's nobody here from Coca-Cola.
BMO's around somewhere.
Right, okay. Well, in 1984, they had the line in English, which was Coke adds life. The translation in German at the time was something akin to Coke brings you back from the dead, which nowadays might be kind of cool, but you can imagine at the time it was a translation mistake. So you can't afford to spend that much time on a brand to have it tank due to a poor choice of words in localization. You need to think about it. And that's where transcreation comes in and broaches that gap.
So I think we just touched on this next bit just then briefly, but then kind of in that global market, what are then some of the cultural challenges that brands face today?
It's a very aware world. Yeah. That's kind of the biggest understatement of the day, perhaps. You've got to really think about where things are going. People communicate in different ways in different locations. We all know that. That's the easy part. But levels of social progression are different from place to place. Levels of penetration of certain kind of mindset, how open people are, how closed people are, it varies. Something in one language might mean something else in another. So I'll pick an example, a cup of coffee. So there's a phrase in Hungarian they still use today, hatravan mega fikatelevish, which is here comes the black soup. You might think, well, what is that? Well, back in the 17th century is where it comes from, where the Ottoman Turks invaded Hungary. And of course, they served this black, thick liquid when they started talking to people, talking about the tax that they now owed their new masters. The black liquid was, of course, coffee. So that phrase today is still used when someone says, no, hang on, where's the bad news? Come on, something's coming. Where's the black soup? So even something as innocuous as coffee can mean something somewhere else. You multiply that by the number of things that are out there in the Internet of Things and think where that can go. So you've got to be really sure about the traveling power of an idea or a thing. And you can't just assume it will work the same way as it does in your mother tongue.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's get down to then the strategies that brands can use to kind of keep themselves safe or kind of get away from those potential risks that they could do. What can they do?
Cross fingers? No, they talk to people. No matter how much you learn about culture, and I read a lot of Wikipedia, you can probably tell, you never stop, right? Because culture doesn't stop. Culture changes. The ideals of one location are different to another location, we know that, but they're also going to be different based on the year. If we were talking about the 1920s, imagine how my voice would sound. Imagine how your voice would sound. It'd be a very different story entirely. So you've got to think about the context from a social perspective, you know, in terms of the demographic and where it's going. Very simply, you've got to think about it. Localization cannot be an afterthought. It can't be we've made this, we'd like to do that in 20 countries because we'd very much like the revenue of those 20 countries, please. It's a fact, right? There's somebody nodding in the audience over there, I hear. But you've got to think about the traveling power of that and what that can mean to your brand. You want it to be received in the right way, warmly and welcomed.
So, I mean, let's have an example of that then. Can you give us kind of a successful case study of a campaign that's resonated across kind of a diverse region or audiences?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's many, of course, that I can't give all the full details for, but just to pick one, for example, so Magnum ice cream, one of their ice cream pots has like a chocolate cap on the top. You crack like a creme brulee with a spoon. The headline for that was "Carefully Made to Be Broken." That's quite clever. How's that going to work in 60 countries? I can't go through all of them, but I can give you one. So in French, that became "Êtes-vous prêt à quelqu'un?" So are you ready for a crush? But then, of course, that doesn't really sound very good, does it? But in French, when you say the word quelqu'un, in this example, it means to have a crush on someone, as well as the sound of crack when you hit the spoon. So you can see there's a clever play on words in there that functions uniquely to the French. Is it different from the English? Absolutely. Is that okay? Yes, that's lesson 101 in transcreation. But pick another example for Crayola. Their headline was "Everything Imaginable." They wanted to take that to Japan. Now, "Everything Imaginable" is only two words. How badly wrong can that go, right? But you could just say "Nanimokamo, you can imagine everything. It doesn't sound very good in Japanese. But if you change it around and you play with the words, you can say "Sōzōryoku wa sōzōryoku." You might be forgiven for thinking I just said the same thing twice. Because in Japanese, due to the nature of the characters, you can have the word creativity and imagination, and they can be phonetically the same, but visually, due to the characters, different. So what I've actually said is imagination is the root of creativity. You know, and it pulls that thing with that pink thing through. So just to give two short examples.
Just from that one example, I'm actually afraid to ask how many languages you speak, especially compared to my one English. Sometimes I don't do that well. Let's get back to the point. So we're marketers in the room. Everyone cares about measurement.
Sure.
How do you measure the success of a project then?
It's very tricky. A lot of clients will understandably say, well, I get transcreation now, thank you, but how can I make sure that translates into, pardon the pun, into something kind of metric that I can represent? Well, I'd have to have two different realities to do that. One where you did do it and one where you didn't, to be able to really give you the hard numbers for that. And unfortunately, we don't live in that reality. But what I can tell you is feeding that thought process at the beginning of thinking about how that's going to travel, looking at the idea when it's just an idea, when you haven't shot it, when you haven't put the script down yet. Because if you're going to change it afterwards, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of hassle that we can all do without. So feeding that into the process is where you're going to really generate those results afterwards. It does require a bit of faith, but I suppose so does putting your brand in the hands of a copywriter every time you do it. So, you know, go figure.
Yeah. So at the beginning, you talked about kind of the 80s Coke sample.
Sure.
I think it'd be interesting to kind of learn kind of how the industry's approach to transcreation has changed over kind of that time, over a decade. Where does the industry stand in it now? What do you kind of see happening or changing?
Well, transcreation is actually, you know, a little shameless plug here. It's actually tagged baby. You know, we invented transcreation back in 1989, though strangely, we didn't put a copyright on it. Don't ask me why, I wasn't here. But we were the first brand to really start harnessing it, seeing it as a different thing from translation. Today, there are many agencies who do a very, very good job at transcreation, but it's the difference between those two spaces of translation, factual exchange of information from one language to another, versus transcreation, where you're trying to communicate the feel, the essence of it, you know, the flavor of it. And that can be very different to what you're feeding into the English. So people have jumped on their bandwagon. You know, there are other firms out there offering transcreation, obviously, because it's lucrative and it's fun and it's exciting. But really feeding into it to make it bounce, to make it bring to life, you've got to care. You've got to care about the brand. You've got to understand who that brand is. Just because that brand thinks they are this person tomorrow, it doesn't mean they're going to be that same person in a couple of years' time. They might change entirely their thinking and where they're currently sat, who they're trying to talk to. Think of brands, Skoda, let's borrow a good success example, right? There was a time when they were taking the mick out of quite a great deal, certainly in this country and further abroad. Now, they're pretty good. Why? They worked hard, but they also rebranded themselves. So imagine if you were attacking that brand as a copywriter circa 1970 versus a copywriter tackling it today. Two very different animals. So how well do you think you know a brand? Where they want to be tomorrow is not necessarily where they are today. And you've got to be the one to help embrace and energize that transition.
Great. I mean, so I've loved all three examples from Coke, Magnum, and now Skoda. Now I want another. But can we have, what are you working on recently? And how does that highlight the effectiveness of trans creation right now today?
Yeah. Hands up for those in the audience who had toast this morning with butter. Anyone? No? Yeah, there we go. So butter's pretty important. There's a brand, obviously, Flora, which you know, and they have produced a campaign called Skip the Cow, and working very hard with the creative agency Pablo. I've been working to transcreate and produce that across all the content, across all of Europe and a bit further afield. Skip the Cow is the campaign. So plant butter, skip the cow, it's a bit weird. They wanted to harness that idea of it feeling a bit weird. So you imagine local marketers have a certain feel about their precious product and the way they feel about it. And suddenly we've got to turn that on its head and make an ad that feels a bit weird to really get that kind of connection to people, make them go, yeah, it is a bit strange we've been putting plants through a cow for all this time. Why don't we just skip the cow and go to plant butter? So being divisive in different countries was the order of the day. How far do you push it? How far is enough to make people think, but not to make them think, I don't want that. That's not a product for me. So there's a very delicate balance. I can tell you many, many stories about legal challenges, compliance issues, dairy lobbyists, regulatory clearance, all of that kind of stuff to try to bring this to life. But really and truly, it's the creative agency and the mother brand Upfield themselves working with us and saying, we want you to bring this to life in all these countries. Can you help us? We say, roll up our sleeves and say, let's do it. And try to approach that with the mindset of feeling like we're the brand ourselves and how far we can push that forward to really make that resonate.
Brilliant. Now, probably over the whole event, the last couple of years, AI has been such a buzzword that I don't think we're allowed to do a session without mentioning AI. So next question is AI related. But with the adoption of AI and technology in translation and localization on the rise, how do you see this space developing over the next few years?
It's an interesting one, and you're quite right. We don't think we get out of here without answering the question. AI is a thing. We all know that, right? So computer-aided translation has been around since about the 70s. It has developed. There are things such as machine translation post-editing, neural machine translation. There's lots of things that sit within that tech-enabled approach for language. And there's a lot to be said for it, absolutely. If you think about how that can change the way you would translate packaging content, legal content, financial content, heavy tracts of text, it's very, very powerful. And with the use of human proofreaders to really back that up, you can make sure that it still feels natural. But we're talking about transcreation, and that's about how something feels. And whilst, any AI system is capable of digesting a massive amount of data that exists out there in the Internet of Things, it can't tell you how it tastes, because that's about feel. So if I start using idiomatic phrasing, again, it has a particular flavor to it. So the cat that got the cream, for example, I forget the exact French for that, but I know that it translates to, oh, you want the cake, the spoon, and the maid that bought the cake, the milk in. It's all of those things. So if you imagine you had a brand that was using that idea of the cat that got the cream, picture of a cat, cream on its lips, suddenly in French, even though the existing idiom is there, it doesn't work the same way. What are you going to do? You can't pick all the different three things that are in that piece of idiom and then shoot them, because you probably haven't done that when you've done the master, because you probably haven't thought about it, because you probably didn't realize that you can see where this goes. So when it comes to the real feel of something and making sure that resonance is there, you need people. You understand it, feel it, and get it, and make that translate no matter where you go.
Perfect. And we're into the final couple of seconds, but I guess kind of just to leave the audience with something tangible and something kind of to leave with, what's the one key takeaway then you want them to leave the session with about transcreation?
Be open-minded. Just because, we all speak a certain mother tongue, right? Your definitions are provided by the fact that you think in for a lot of people in this room, English logic. To learn another language is to learn another form of logic. Think about when you say, do your shoelaces. How do you say the word do in other languages? Would you say do your shoes? Faire, yeah. And would you say on faire in French? Would you say, of course you wouldn't. It doesn't make sense. It's English logic. Every other country has its own form of linguistic logic. And if you want to be recognized, still stand out, but not look like a foreigner, you've got to embrace it. So a bit of forethought in the beginning of the process, a bit of consultation can go a long way.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us here, Rick. Can we have a round of applause? Brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.